Prologue. With my face pressed heavily into the bed, I grit my teeth, squinting one eye like a cyclops to make out the words printed in script across the sheet. Je me souviens. I remember. More words rise from the pattern on the 400-thread-count French fabric in which I wrap myself every night. The rhythmic motion of my naked body being driven over the cotton makes them jump in and out of focus, appearing and disappearing in disjointed phrases. Le monde, comme il faut. I like sleeping in words, even poorly written nonsense on overpriced sheets, calculated to make their purchasers feel exclusive and well-traveled. The sheets are my Paris, my secret escape, a reminder of the path not taken, a throwback to remind me of those few short years in which I had truly escaped and had a life of my own. Très cher, mon Dieu. Funny thing, that great and fearsome Dieu of my childhood. While I was certainly ton, God had never seemed to be mon. But look at me now, how free I am, spread out here in pain. When my parents once stayed in our guest room on these sheets, my father pointed out that things printed with French phrases reeked of yuppie pretentiousness, of trying too hard, like the fancy chaude and froid faucet handles my husband André and I had special ordered for our guest bathroom. Now, Melisse, my father chortled, eyes twinkling. You realize, don't you, that a real European would never have these sheets. I agreed with him, as I always did. My dad was the most brilliant, erudite person in my hemisphere. But I needed the sheets to remind me of those few good years, of that path not taken and now gone forever. Daddy, I gasp, crushed into the expensive memory foam mattress. I wish the mattress could remember everything so I could forget. I grab les bons rêves and crumple them in my hand as the commotion above and behind me becomes more insistent, harder, deeper, faster. I free my hand from where it is pinned at my side and slide it along the sheets, douce, M, nuit, until I can bring it to my mouth. I part my lips slowly and begin to suck my thumb, caressing it with lips and tongue. Physically, it soothes and numbs me. It also increases the frenetic pumping and grinding behind me, which is soothing too, because it means I will soon be free. I close my eyes, torride, très gentil, and I suck slowly and rhythmically. I know what I need to do. Daddy, yes, yes, please. Please, Daddy, please, I whisper. I cannot look at the lovely words on the sheets anymore. If I can just get through this, I won't have to think about it again for a few days. It's very simple, I tell myself. It works every time. Yes, Daddy, please. More. My words are slobbery and lisping, wrapped around my thumb. The sheer monotony of the performance blends with the pain to form a dull film in my brain. The print goes out of focus. Deeper, Daddy, give me more. I can barely speak. But I will myself to relax as the frenzy reaches its apex. There are two or three more excruciating thrusts and an interminable pause. André finally releases me, and I can breathe once more. My husband is pleased for another day or two. I slowly ease open my balled fists, releasing the crushed sheet that had wetly accompanied my thumb. I idly wonder which words had been put in my mouth. What silent, cottony verbiage I had been choking on. I open my eyes. Je ne me souviens pas. I don't remember. A full decade later, I am still trying to remember. I really am. What are your feelings about sex? The dowdy woman across from me asks. I stare at her. Je ne me souviens pas. André and I are in marriage counseling at this point. Together for 11 years, married for 4. And I really love my smart, shy husband. He has morphed over the years, from poorly dressed martial arts teacher to sharp-tongued VP at a major company. We are much alike in many ways, sarcastic, misanthropic, bookish, ambitious. And we take our relationship really seriously, sex issues and all. I don't remember how we found her, but the therapist's office is in an old church. It is the first time I have been to a marriage counselor, of course, but it is also the first time I have been back inside a church since I fled my childhood religion. I don't care for the therapist, but I love marching under the prim steeple, making a solemn procession through the carved double doors and into a former youth group room to spew details of sexual deviance all over the carpet like a sorority initiate after a hard night. I know the truth of what happens so often within walls like these, so each sordid revelation I vomit up is a small strike back. "What sexual fantasies do you have?" the woman asks in her best, impartial, unable-to-be-shocked voice. "I want out of my marriage. Does that count as a sexual fantasy?" In the face of my mute stare, she presses on. "When did you begin to dislike the sex?" I blink hard. Had I ever liked the sex? I needed it. Wasn't that the same thing? Andre is glued to my side on the couch, swollen eyes imploring me to say something he wants to hear. He squeezes my fingers in desperation until they turn numb. If the sex had stayed simply violent and degrading, we might not be sitting across from the gray-haired therapist with the smoker's voice and the African masks on her walls. But over the years, it had become apparent that Andre wasn't into rough so much as role play. And after the initial frisson of varied sexual ferocity, we have settled into rote repetition, our roles in and out of the bed similarly ritualized. Andre has grown increasingly self-serving, controlling, and smothering in every arena. After so many years, we have become conjoined twins, but my side has all the vital organs, and they're starting to fail. "Okay, let me rephrase that," says the therapist, betraying an unprofessional hint of frustration as my silence drags on. "I am not being purposely difficult. I am never purposely difficult. I just don't feel I have anything to offer on the subject. Gauging my own sexual interest is an unfamiliar sport." She tries once more. "When did you like the sex?" "Did I ever like it?" My search for rough sex has lasted forever. Even before I discovered Blue Velvet and the story of O, I was goading bewildered preppies to hit me and hurt me, urging them to inflict bruises, welts, and bites. I didn't know why. I don't know if I ever knew why, and I didn't care. I always told myself that it is just what I like. Not all of my conquests allowed me to bully them into violent sex, of course, but none of them lasted very long. I had no long-term relationships before Andre. For those glorious short years of freedom, I had always moved quickly from one hookup to the next, looking for something, searching for someone. Something to make me feel. Someone to make me feel bad. At last, the counselor has something to work with. She removes her glasses and lowers her chin, gazing at me with the mixture of sympathy and reprimand I used to get from my high school calculus teacher. "Why does sex have to make you feel bad? Where did you learn that sex is bad?" I attempt to return her gaze steadily, but my face does not cooperate. The corners of my mouth leap in lopsided, disconnected lurches like Venetian blinds in a cheap hotel room, first one side, then the other, jerking uncontrollably upward in drunken, goofy spurts. Clearly, she does not know the Seventh-day Adventist Church.